50 years ago, Marshall McLuhan published Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man. In that book, McLuhan introduced the world to his famous maxim, the medium is the message. Within a matter of months, recalled author and critic Lewis Lapham, the book acquired the standing of Holy Scripture and made McLuhan, quote, the foremost oracle of the age. Assessing all media that came before television and predicting all that would come after, McLuhan argued that we shape our tools, and thereafter our tools shape us. Someday, he saw, we would all think differently. WNYC's Sarah Fischko offers us a quick glimpse of the enigmatic ideas of the enigmatic man.
Marshall McLuhan's way of thinking took the culture by storm in the 1960s. Television had just become a fixture in American living rooms, and McLuhan analyzed TV with strange, forward-looking aphorisms, like the medium is the message.
Mr. McLuhan, if you'll be good enough, let's start there with the heart of your doctrine itself. The now famous sentence, the medium is the message.
The medium is a happening. It creates an environment.
He spoke about how TV unified and tribalized humans, creating a global village. He was a great formulator around 50 years ago.
But a medium is the message in the sense that it creates a totally new world and a totally new psychic outlook for populations.
Not that he owned a TV himself. McLuhan wasn't ranting about the content of I Love Lucy or the dangers of the Untouchables, but about how the medium itself was affecting society.
Media are like that. They just alter the total social temperature. Since TV, the whole American political temperature has cooled down, 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 until the political process is almost approaching rigor mortis.
In the 60s, kids on campuses who had grown up with TV were ready for it, says author and Vanderbilt University professor Cecilia Tichy.
We were transfixed. We were embracing his position, talking about it late night over red wine in cafes and our ratty little graduate student apartments.
A lot of people felt at the time that he understood the new world as nobody else understood it.
At the height of it all, author and critic Richard Castellanets interviewed McLuhan, who was in his 50s, a graying gentleman in a sport jacket.
I remember visiting his house, and he would lie on his living room couch, and there'd be a whole bunch of books stacked on the top of the couch. That was how he understood things, by reading books and by extending perceptions from the books he read.
How did a book-smart, avuncular Canadian professor tap into the zeitgeist of the American 1960s? McLuhan himself might have said it was his distance.
Canadians have a tremendous opportunity to observe what's really happening in the world. I think we're very lucky to be a backward country.
He was very Canadian. And one of his ideas was he thought he could see the U.S. better from Canada. He wasn't immersed in the New World, but he thought about it.
Back in the 1950s, Canada was basically just a refrigerator and a hardware shop for Great Britain. It really didn't have much of its own identity.
Douglas Copeland's book on McLuhan is entitled You Know Nothing of My Work.
And with that disengagement or freedom came a sense of, like, what is this TV thing here? Let's try and figure out what it's all about.
Marshall McLuhan, born in 1911, was not only a Canadian, he was also a devout practicing Catholic. Not necessarily the predictable resume for a hip media guru. And there were other factors contributing to his high degree of remove, including what Copeland describes as an Asperger's-like tendency in McLuhan's family background.
He and his mother were both perfect mimics, and they had these amazing memories where they could read something once and then just repeat it for the rest of their life. And their brains were just wired very differently than most people's then and now. And so it's not surprising he went on to have a different life, a different way of thinking.
It's impossible to have a point of view in the electric age and have any meaning at all. You've got to be everywhere at once, whether you like it or not, and that is not a point of view.
One by one, as he emerged, McLuhan revealed fairly breathtaking, if borderline incomprehensible, formulations. Seeing how Joe McCarthy had been demolished in a televised hearing a few years before, McLuhan called McCarthy too hot for TV. Hitler, he concluded, would never have risen to power in the TV era, nor any similarly over-the-top personality or event, such as the first television war, for example.
Like the Vietnam War is a hot war, and it won't go on TV. It's the first hot shooting war ever shown on a cool medium. The cool medium involves the whole audience so deeply they find war unbearable. Show the same war on movie, on
press, photography, and so on, people won't feel too badly about it. But on TV, they really feel it. And so LBJ is making a great big mistake in trying to have a hot war on a cool medium. When you
say what... It's hard to imagine now, but during the swinging 60s, there was no more visible public intellectual than Marshall McLuhan. Later, Woody Allen immortalized him in Annie Hall.
Now, Marshall McLuhan deals with it in terms of it being a high intensity, you understand, a hot medium.
It was the realization of a brainy dream. Show up the pretentious fool who thinks he understands McLuhan by producing McLuhan himself to take him down. And there was the guru in his trademark jacket and white shirt.
You know nothing of my work. You mean my whole fallacy is wrong. How you ever got to teach a course in anything is totally amazing.
The fact is, that was quite right. Many people did and still do know nothing of his work.
His books are really dense. They're opaque almost. It takes a half hour to read four pages. Then you have to put it down and really think. He's not an easy read. He never was.
But he was tuned in, McLuhan. He was the first to use the word surfing for the way we move through media and information. And he even predicted some form of our life with computers. All this 40 years before the fact.
We are hurrying back and forth across town at morning and night to situations which we could quite easily encompass by closed circuit. Documents, contracts, data. All of these materials actually could be just as available on closed circuit at home.
You have to remember, says Cecilia Tichy, that in the early days of TV, in the 50s, people were terrified that television might replace the book.
Here came McLuhan 10 years later to say, in effect, get over it. We're in a new era. Let's embrace it. Let's acknowledge it. Let's explore its values, its traits.
And explore its values he most heatedly and coolly did among citizens of the global village.
I mean, we've all been on a plane, and the moment the wheels hit the ground, every single person on the plane reaches into their pocket for their BlackBerry or their iPhone or what have you, and they want that sort of sense of connection. And I think when he talks about the global village, what he's really talking about is that innate need for everyone to feel far more connected than they were back in 1962. And now with Facebook, et cetera, it seems like there's no limit to how connected we want to be with each other as a species.
Do those things connect us or separate us, welcome us or alienate us? Has Google made us dumber or smarter? Those are questions Marshall McLuhan would have loved. No doubt he'd have had emphatic answers for them all in crisp and complex and very McLuhan-esque formulations in 140 characters. For On the Media, I'm Sarah Fishkoe.